Seconds. Lucas fires for the win.
He got it! He got it!
Oh my goodness!
Hands to
Adam. He's hit the backfield! He's hit the backfield! Adam Decker with the play of the game!
Not a Lucius for three and the win!
He got it! He got it! He got it! He got it. The buzzer!
Touchdown MSU!
As Michigan State is now going to the Final Four!
Hey everybody, welcome to the Only Colors podcast number 2. I am LVS and I'm here with Pete Rossman. Pete, introduce yourself.
Hey, you know me, Pete. How are you doing, everyone?
So MSU comes off of a not quite convincing but still solid victory against Illinois on Saturday to run the record to 7-0. First time MSU has been 7-0 since 1966, as you may have heard approximately 600 times so far this week. Pete, what struck you, what impressed you the most about the game on Saturday?
Well, in a completely original phrase that I invented all on my own, it was a tale of two halves. The first half, I was afraid for the walls in my friend's house who I rent from because the offensive line couldn't hold anyone back. You know, Illinois, we were sort of holding them back, but you know, they're still getting a decent rush. Keyshawn had his second brain fart of the season. Kirk Cousins, when he wasn't throwing passes into triple coverage, he was throwing 4 feet over the receiver's heads on some balls. And yet still we managed to get there 6-3. And the strangest thing was, I wasn't really that dreadful. I was just more frustrated than anything else. So it's a weird feeling. How about you after the first half?
Yeah, you know, at halftime, I got the sense that we had gotten the worst play out of our system, I think. I was confident that the coaches were going to make the necessary changes at the half to turn things around because it was a very flat performance in the first half, obviously. You mentioned about Cousins. You know, he had all kinds of problems thrown, but I think that most of them had to do with him being pressured like crazy on almost every single time that he dropped pat to throw. I thought that the offensive line came out in the second half and played much, much, much better. And once again, you have to talk about the defense who made the big plays and big spots and honestly really won the game for the team, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, obviously. I mean, when I was writing the review for this game, I looked back and saw that Michigan State scored on all 5 through possessions on the second half, a couple because they got nice drives, but also 2 or 3 because the defense gave them excellent field position right on the Illinois about sometimes on the 15, sometimes on the 30. I mean, Conroy, he's just going to make those field goals from there. And I think on the first touchdown, you can't leave a receiver that wide open with Kirk Cousins because he's going to, 9 times out of 10, he will hit that receiver deep.
Yeah, that just looked like busted coverage to me.
Mm-hmm.
Does it concern you at all that we had to settle for field goals instead of cashing it into the end zone on so many of those drives?
I mean, it will against Iowa. Not particularly, because for some reason it doesn't really bother me all that much, because this was the rushing game's worst performance of the year, and it probably, like, the only other games I expect to see it as bad is probably the Iowa game.
Yeah.
I think, so summing up, I guess I'm not really all that unconcerned, but I could easily be wrong.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that we kind of have to give credit where credit's due. You know, Illinois has got some problems offensively, although, you know, Michael LeSueur is a legitimate Big Ten back. He's very good. But, you know, that's a good defense that we played against. I mean, that defensive line is fantastic. Martez Wilson actually, you know, knows how to play football this year in addition to his obvious physical gifts. The secondary blew the coverage on the Cunningham touchdown, but aside from that, looked pretty decent. And that's a good defense. You know, I think we have to give some credit to them, too. And they had a lot to do with MSU's problems, I think.
Oh, definitely. The only thing that's going to hold this Illinois team back from a bowl is Ron Cook. And don't count him out, because he could easily pull this one out.
Absolutely. But, you know, it seems like everyone is giving so much credit to those two new coordinators that they brought in this year. It seems like they may be doing most of the coaching, which anytime you can have Zook do less of the coaching, that strikes me as a win for that team. But, I think that Illinois is going to pick up a few more wins over the course of the Big Ten season, and I think by the end of the year, we can look back on that as a pretty solid performance, particularly the way that we just dominated the second half. And I guess let's talk about the running game a little bit. MSU with only 93 yards rushing on the day, by far the poorest performance of the season. We don't want to look ahead to Iowa too much because we've got a game ahead of us this week. But, do you see that as the running game being exposed, or do you see that, again, as just a symptom of us playing a pretty good defense on Saturday?
A little bit of both. I don't really see it as a running game. It's more like sort of like an offensive line thing being exposed, because it's kind of hard to run up the middle when you have three or four defensive players in the backfield by the time you get the ball.
I agree with that. That was particularly the case in the first half.
Yeah, and I think Treadwell did a better job in the second half, sort of like bouncing runs outside, particularly with Keyshawn and Caper, just trying to like get to the side a little bit. And there was some positive gains in the second half.
Yeah, and Caper's touchdown run he got some fantastic blocking on that one and was able to cut it outside. That was a nice-looking play.
Yes, that was. I thought he was out of bounds two or three times on that play, but he stayed in.
What the referees don't see won't hurt us.
Exactly.
Kirk Cousins on Saturday, the offensive line troubles really, really hindered him. He obviously didn't look as sharp as he has at other points in the season. But, you know, in the second half, he made the throws. And to his credit, when the pass rush was coming like crazy in the first half, he hung in there. He didn't turn the ball over, which I think that Kirk Cousins of last year would have done. You know, even though it wasn't his finest game, I just get more and more confident in the guy each week.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can really see him starting to learn, even over the course of the season. Like, when you look back to Notre Dame game, how it just wing passes in the coverage, and he did have a couple of those in the first half, definitely. But he's starting to throw more and more balls away, which is a step up from Zach. Now, if you just get him to the last stage, which is scramble for 4 or 5 yards and then slide, I mean, he's going to be I would say a really good quarterback, but I don't think they would do that term justice by the time his senior year rolls around.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the guy, he's 10th in the country in pass efficiency right now, so even though MSU isn't racking up the gaudy stats, the guy's getting it done when we need for him to get it done, and play-action passing is just such a weapon for this team. Even when the running game wasn't able to dominate like it has in previous games this season. I mean, he sells that fake so well, it just freezes the safeties and opens up so many opportunities downfield. He's better at that than any MSU quarterback I can remember.
Yeah, definitely. I have to agree with everything you just said there.
I love it when that happens. So, MSU now 7-0. And lofty heights for this team. The expectations are just going to keep on ramping up if we can keep on winning these games. With Ohio State losing on Saturday to Wisconsin, there's a pretty clear path to a Big Ten championship for this team. So how are you feeling about things right now? It's just a very strange feeling for me. What about you?
I'm still guarded. Like, I still think that something's going to happen, which is going to cause this, not to happen somehow. Like, I don't even want to, like, talk about the next games, because I just feel like somehow I'm going to jinx the team.
Yeah.
And they're somehow going to throw, like, 6 or 7 interceptions against Northwestern, like, fumbles. I don't know.
I guess we can only hope the crazy Old Testament God doesn't listen to this podcast.
No, I'm pretty sure he's well entrenched in West Lafayette right now, so I think we're in the clear.
Good. To be totally honest with you, I think that the predictions of this team going 12-0 are way high in the sky. I mean, we've got a dangerous game coming up this weekend, then game in Iowa, which still to this point looks every bit as difficult as I thought that it was going to be heading into the season. And, once that game is done, there's not that many named teams remaining on the schedule, but MSU hasn't won in state college since the 60s, and you know, there's a lot of opportunities for this team to slip up. It's very exciting, but I think that it's kind of necessary for everybody to keep expectations a little bit in check.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, Purdue, I mean, somehow they've been winning. I mean, they're better than they have any right to be right now. Minnesota, they just look dead in the water right now. I don't think any replacement coach is going to really help these things, but, I mean, there's still a team that can put up, I mean, Weber can still put up 21, 28 points at anyone. I don't think they'll be enough to win, but.
Yeah, I have to say, after that game in Minneapolis last year, that's the one team on this schedule that I want MSU to go out and just absolutely stomp. I want to win that game by 35.
Yeah, but I mean, it just seems like a snuff film at that point. I mean,
yeah.
It's just so helpless. And so I would feel bad if we weren't, like, you know, trying to get, like, BCS points, but.
Yeah.
You gotta do what you gotta do with the situation.
Oh, yeah. Well, I just wanted to, like, you remember when we beat Michigan in 2001 and then they came back the next year? What was the final score, like 49-3 or something like that?
That was. But we were up 3-0 in that game, if I remember correctly.
We got the first 3 points and then gave up 49 unanswered. But I want the Minnesota game to look like that. I don't care about their coaching woes. No mercy. So, you know, it's going to be a heck of a season going forward. There's a lot to be excited about, but as expectations keep on ramping up, I think that our collective anxiety is going to kind of remain proportional. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh, dear God.
Yeah, exactly. So, in any event, you want to welcome our first guest onto the show?
Let's do it.
Our first guest on the show tonight is Roger Sherman, proprietor and head writer at Sippin' on Purple, the fantastic SB Nation Northwestern blog. Hey, Roger, how's it going?
Hey, man. Just decided I'm going to call myself the proprietor of things more often. that sounds awesome. I really like that. It does well on a resume.
We like to make our guests feel comfortable on the show before we then rip them apart with tough questions. So.
I can work with that.
All right. So Northwestern comes off a bye week. Before that, obviously a difficult loss to Purdue. It seems to me that Northwestern fans are probably the most unhappy fans with a 5-1 team in the country. Can you just talk a little bit about how the season's gone this year and what the causes for concern are?
Yeah, it's kind of weird because we're dealing with a program that holds the record for most consecutive games lost, and we're 5-1 right now, and people are like kind of pissed off.
Yeah,
it's really strange. The reason we're 5-1 is because we played 6 unspeakably bad teams, and we still managed to lose to Purdue, which is sort of a feat considering you know, they have like 8 working ACLs on their entire offense, which is unfortunate. So. That's basically what's happened. You know, we played basically Michigan State is going to be the first, like, real opponent. It's probably going to be, it could get ugly because so far this year, you know, 6 games, you know, we played 3 games against major conference teams. Vanderbilt, which is, like, by far the worst team in the S. Well, actually, they did win 1 game in conference, so, but they're pretty bad. Minnesota, which is just hilarious, and Purdue, you know, obviously we lost to them anyway. I wouldn't really classify any of those as, like, good quality opponents. So that's why people are a little bit disappointed with, you know, that record right now, I guess.
All right. So let's talk first about the things that have gone right this season so far for Northwestern. Dan Persa, the quarterback, fourth in the country right now in pass efficiency, is completing almost 80% of his passes. What do you think have been the keys to his success so far this season?
Well, Dan Persa, the thing, he's a lot like he has a lot of characteristics of Northwestern quarterbacks you might have seen in the past, that he's like really accurate with short passes. That's basically his bread and butter. He's also really fast, which is kind of what we've been having the past few years, you know, like Mike Kafka last year. But he's just much better at it than any of those guys have been. It's really surprising. I was not expecting him to be as good as he has been. But he's essentially our entire offense right now. You know, this kind of 5-yard, like, out routes, he gets that all day long. Not many drops from the receiving core. And every once in a while, he will air it out. But basically, you know, the Northwestern dink and dunk is alive and well. It's really been out of nowhere, because last year, Dan Persa was like, he was a backup, but, you know, he didn't do anything particularly, I guess, impressive. He threw an interception against Towson, which was, like, that's just weird. I mean, so we were expecting him to be, you know, a god amongst men, but that is how I would describe him right now.
And so you think that this is an improvement this season? I mean, because Mike Kafka was pretty good last year, and before that, I mean, Northwestern has had a number of decent quarterbacks, and you think that that person is the best of the bunch?
Oh yeah, at least recently. Well, it's kind of hard to say, because he might just look, well, like you said, you know, he's fourth in the nation in passing efficiency. He completes, I think he leads the nation in completion rating. He's got like 78%. But for a while on my site, there was the "Is Dan Persa's completion percentage higher than my GPA game?" And he was beating me for a long time. Which is disturbing, because, like, you know, he was completing like 86% of his passes, and I was like, aww.
So if MSU plays well this week, it'll actually make you look better by comparison.
Oh, yeah. I've been like, every time there's an 8-beat completion, I'm like, kind of pumped, you know, like, because that's the thing. There's the downside is obviously, oh man, there was an incompletion. But on the plus side, you know, hey, now that, you know, like, see, I got in stats last year, is it really, you know, it's looking good right now when he's like 73% of his passes. The thing that I would say about him is he's been our entire offense this year. You know, Northwestern just has no running. We have no running game right now to speak of whatsoever. We have, like, 18 running backs that combine for, like, 45 carries and, like, 90 yards a game. It's really rough, and he's our leading rush, which means he's our leading rusher, person, that is.
Yeah.
And it's, whereas in past we've had other weapons, this year he's kind of our one-man, you know, show going on.
Okay, so between the lack of a running game and additionally, Persa's getting sacked almost three times a game, and that's, you know, in the kind of pass and spread that Northwestern runs, the quarterback doesn't usually hold on to the ball for very long, so three sacks seems like a lot. Those two things taken together kind of suggest to me that there could be some problems with the offensive line for Northwestern. Is that been the case?
Yeah, it's been a little bit shaky. It has not been like you said, you know, it's not an offense where you're dropping back and, like, hanging around for a while. So I think that some of them have been, you know, a little bit coverage shacky. But for the most part, it's a little bit worrisome. The offense, with regards to the running game, I'm sure a lot of the blame goes on the offensive line. But, you know, week one against Vanderbilt, Arby Fields, who was at the time our starting running back, had 10 carries for -7 yards, because get the ball on an option and just, like, dart backwards. So it's like some of it's coming from up front. We definitely don't have a good unit. I'm definitely really terrified of what an actual defensive line will do against them. But at the same time, you know, we haven't had much of a running game.
Yeah, I've got a question about the defense. You know, it seems like Northwestern, when I think of Northwestern defense, like I always think of, you know, good but not great, but with like one massive playmaker there, like a Corey Wooten or a Pat Fitzgerald there. Is this sort of similar to what the Northwestern defense is like this year?
Yeah, well, we got Vince Brown up front. Last I checked, he was, I'm not sure if he still is after the bye week, but he was leading the Big Ten in sacks. He's a defensive end, and his biceps are the size of my head, and he's just a terrifying individual. He's been pretty much, you know, the one consistent factor. I would say that's a pretty good characterization of our defense this year, because, I mean, you look at the games they've had, and there's been some ugly stuff that's gone on. We gave up, like, over 200 yards rushing against Purdue. Minnesota, DeLeon Eskridge had, like, 120 yards rushing against us. You know, and those aren't, like, you know, big names, I guess, at running back. So that hasn't been good. So, but I would definitely say that the highlight of that unit is just Vince Brown. He's been outstanding. I thought there would be a drop-off because we had Corey Wooten last year, and, you know, he would pick up, you know, double teams almost every play, even though he wasn't, you know, performing as well as he had in past years. So that kind of drew a little bit of the attention away from the other side with Vince Brown. So I was expecting there to be a drop-off from him, but turned out he's been awesome. So, you know, that's been great.
Okay. So what's up with Stephen Demos? Because I've just seen some of his kicks so far this year, and they haven't looked good.
Yeah, Stephen Demos. He has not looked very good at all. It's weird because last year, you know, he's a second team All Big Ten, you know, and then the Outback Bowl happens. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar. Like after a pretty decent year, he went 0-3, missed one game-winning field goal, then missed a potential game-tying field goal, and got injured on that play. And I said at the time, when I was depressed walking around Tampa, which is the worst place on the face of the planet Earth, sorry, anyone from Tampa, dear God, we were just walking through this, like, horrific hellscape that is downtown Tampa, and I was just thinking to myself, there's no way Stephen Demos could ever come back and be, like, an effective football player, because that has to mess with your head to just fail in such a, like, a massive and noticeable way. And kickers are all about psyche, and he's come back this year, and, you know, he's like 1-for-5 on kicks over 40 yards, something like that. He's shanking extra points left and right. There's a new holder. A lot of people are saying, like, oh, it's got to be, it's not all on Demos. But, you know, at a certain point, if you're, like, regularly missing extra points, I don't know who it is, but once in a while, it's acceptable, and it just happens. You know, for most Big Ten, not most Big Ten teams, but it is something that happens in college football. But he's missing, like, regularly shaking extra points to the point where, you know, it almost cost Northwestern the game against Minnesota. We ended up winning by 1 point, but that was not good. It's basically, like, terrifying every time there's any sort of field goal opportunity going on, which is not a good thing. You know, you shouldn't have to hold your breath on extra points. And I understand it's probably not all his fault, but, you know, it's rough. And that's why we've adopted calling him Effin' Stephen.
I have to say, I think that was the most podcast awards that have ever been devoted to a kicker in the history of the internet. So, well done.
Hey, I can keep going. I can go for days.
All right, so let's go back real quickly and talk about one more thing on the Northwestern defense. So, Northwestern right now is 71st nationally in yards given up on by the pass, but 24th in pass efficiency, which kind of suggests that teams are throwing on Northwestern a lot, but aren't getting a ton of yards per play. I know you've talked a little bit how Northwestern's pass rush has been pretty decent this season. Can you just talk about the play of the pass defense generally?
Jordan Maiden and Justin Vaught are our quarterbacks. For a while it looked pretty terrifying. They weren't really playing up to par the first few games, but I think they've kind of settled down as a unit. There was one game where, Justin Vaught had, 11 tackles or something like that, and I was like, well, that's not because he was playing great, run defense. That's because he got thrown at, 11 times, and they were all complete. But that was earlier in the year. They've kind of stepped it up in recent weeks. I'm not sure if that's because they've, sort of come together as a unit, or whether that's because, it was Purdue and Minnesota, but they could get picked apart by, Michigan State. I mean, basically, it's not something I'm looking forward to, the pass defense.
All right, so with the doom and gloom on the pass defense, I guess this is a good time just to ask you, generally speaking, how you're feeling about the game on Saturday, and ask you for a prediction if you have one.
Well, the thing is, Northwestern has this disturbing ability to make you think that they're going to lose sometimes. I'm thinking of last year against Iowa where. There was no conceivable reason that they should have beaten number 14 in the country. And then they, did. So I don't want to get too, doobie gloomy, like you just said about it. I don't want to be too down on it. But, I don't really see any way they can beat, Michigan State. I mean, I've thought about, I just can't see it happening. They're just a much better team. Man, this sounds really depressing, doesn't it? Yeah.
I have to tell you, I look at this game and I see Michigan State probably being a stronger team, but I also see, Northwestern as a team coming in with an incredibly efficient quarterback and an offense that has given MSU trouble historically. And, Northwestern's pretty well coached, and it's a home game, and they're coming off of a bye week, so it doesn't seem to me necessarily as impossible as you're making it out to be.
I can see us, jumping out to a nice 35-point lead and then letting Michigan State back into it. That's how it works here. I can see us putting up some points. I'll give you guys Northwestern, 24, and give Michigan State, 35. That's my fine. I'm sticking to it. I just came up with those numbers off the top of my head. But I'm sticking to it.
All right. And with that, we'd just like to thank our guest again, Roger Sherman from Sipping on Purple. And thanks for being on the show, Roger.
Thanks a lot, Roger. Bye. Thanks, man. On the only podcast, our third and final guest is going to be Spartan Dan. You know him as a commenter / contributor to The Only Colors and publisher of Bradley Terry Ratings that we use on the site as sort of like a panacea to some of those other ranking systems out there. I'm not going to say any names like Bill Billingsley rankings, but so how are you doing, Dan?
Good.
Okay, good. I guess, first of all, let's go over the BCS rankings. Michigan State. They were both 8 in the USA Today and Harris polls, which each count 1/3. But they moved up to 7 thanks to all the strength of computers, who ranked the Michigan State mostly 3rd and 4th, except for the aforementioned Billingsley rankings, which ranks them 12th. Do you want to talk about the computer rankings and how they factor into the BCS for a little bit?
Sure. The way they do it is you've got 6 different computer rankings, and each one kind of votes on a top 25. you throw out the highest ranking and lowest ranking for each team, and then the average of the other four gives you a certain number of points, and that's weighted one-third along with each of the polls. So the fact that Billingsley has us 12th this week doesn't actually hurt us. It just gets thrown out along with one of the two that had us third.
Yeah, it just gives us fodder to make fun of him more and more. Billingsley's rankings are completely ridiculous. I mean, the way that I understand it, and Dan, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but he essentially, the baseline that he starts from is the way that the team performed last year. So MSU's season last year is being held against our status this year. Is that true?
As far as I know, I've read a little bit about his rankings. He doesn't publish his formula, and actually I think the only one of the computers used that is, I mean, where the formula itself is published is the Colley Matrix. From what I've read about it, yeah, he starts with last year's final standings as essentially a preseason poll and has all sorts of weird rules that, as it turns out, come pretty close to mimicking what the human voters do, except that because none of the computers are allowed to use margin of victory, I'm not even sure why they threw it out. I think it was computers disagreed with the polls one year, and they said, oh, this team ran up the score so much, that's why they're rated so high. Throw out margin of victory.
And take away any kind of statistical honesty while they're at it.
Yeah. Pretty much. I mean, if you're going to tell me to rank the teams and you're not going to let me use the fact that LSU beat Tennessee on 13 men on the field penalty and Oregon beat the crap out of them, then of course I'm going to look silly.
Well, I hope you used air quotes when you said LSU beat Tennessee, because that was one of the craziest endings I could ever imagine to a game.
I don't know what it is, but whenever Les Miles is playing, just watch, because something strange is going to happen. Well, I suppose Les Miles isn't playing, but whenever his team is playing.
Okay, so I think this is a good segue to talk about your own rating system a little bit, which unfortunately is not yet part of the BCS ranking, but given that you currently rank MSU number 2 in your base hit standings and number 4 in your margin aware standings, quite honestly, I'd be happy if yours would replace Billingsley or any other one. Can you just talk about your ratings for a little bit, what inspired you to do them, a little bit about your methodology maybe, and whatever else you'd like to talk about?
Okay. Well, actually, the basic system is identical to one that's used in college hockey that a lot of hockey stat guys kind of know about. It's referred to as CRAC, or Ken's Ratings for American College Hockey. I believe it was Ken Butler that started publishing them. And actually, somebody over at another blog started publishing the football rankings last year, just posted them a couple of times toward the end of the season. And that got me the idea to try it for basketball, and then this year I decided to do it for football and basketball. And basically the way they work, it's kind of a progression from RPI to the Colley Matrix, which is one of the few other systems that I know offhand, to this. The RPI, you have your record plus your opponent's record plus some correction based on your opponent's strength of schedule, which turns out to be negligible almost all the time. And that has a couple of issues where if you play a really bad team, it can drag your rating down even if you win. And it's also kind of arbitrary how it's weighted, and you can end up with a situation where you play a bunch of teams that have really good records, but built it up against a bunch of bad teams, and your rating is going to be pretty high. So what the Colley Matrix does, essentially, is to use your opponent's ratings instead of their records. And that takes away one problem from the RPI, but you still have the issue where you can drop if you beat a team that's much worse than you are. And so what the Bradley-Terry system does, actually, instead of doing it on an additive scale of percentages, kind of a multiplicative odds scale, which actually the formula is very similar in some regard to Ken Pomeroy's ratings for basketball and the log 5 method for calculating win percentages. And as it turns out, if you're a 2-to-1 favorite over Team A and Team A is a 2-to-1 favorite over Team B, then you're a 4-to-1 favorite over Team B.
Right.
And what this ends up doing is if you beat a team that's really, really awful, it doesn't help you very much because you're expected to beat them almost 100% of the time. So it adds like 0.99 wins to your expected win total and only adds one win to your actual win total. So there's a little bit of a gap there, and your rating does go up a little bit, but not very much.
It seems like you're trying to reward teams for wins and performances that are outside of what's expected of them, but not penalize them for necessarily just taking care of business on their schedule against lesser-ranked teams.
Right. A good example of this, actually, Virginia Tech's basketball team last year, I believe, ended up around 65th in the RPI because they beat, their non-conference schedule was atrocious. They played a bunch of teams that were ranked, I think, in the bottom 50 out of 350 teams.
That's the reason why they missed the tournament right there, yeah.
Exactly. My ratings had them 38th coming into the tournament. And the reason for that was because if they'd played teams ranked around 200 or so, they'd probably win those 95% of the time anyway. So going from 95% of the time to 99% of the time doesn't really change what you would expect the record to be, but it had a huge effect on their RPI. They probably would have, if they had done that, they probably would have made the tournament, and they wouldn't have really been that much better as a team.
Right. Okay. Well, in any event, I think that the rankings that you put together are really fascinating. The methodology page is available on the homepage for the Bradley Terry rankings, which is dbaker.50webs.com, and it's also available. Well, Spartan Dan, you've earned a place in the illustrious For Your Reference bar on the left side of the Only Colors homepage, so listeners can access it from there. I know my wife, who is a statistics PhD student, is currently kind of devouring the methodology and trying to tinker with it a little bit on her own, but it's fantastic stuff, and we certainly would encourage all of our listeners to take a look at it. So if you guys would like, we can finish out the show tonight by doing some picks for this week's Big Ten games. The first game that we'll look at is probably the most boring one on the schedule. We've got Indiana playing at Illinois. How do you guys feel about that game?
Well, Illinois' losses so far this season are to MSU, currently unbeaten, to Ohio State, who's only lost to Wisconsin, to Missouri, who's also unbeaten. So, they've been playing good teams, and they've been playing them close for the most part. And Indiana has been playing bad teams and playing them close. So I think Illinois' defense is going to be too good, and Indiana can't stop anybody. I think Illinois wins that one easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at the spread this game. It started with Illinois giving 7.5 points. It's gone up to Illinois giving 14. Which it's a swing of 6.5 points. It's ludicrous.
Jeez.
So I think Illinois wins the game, but I just don't see their offense, even with Indiana's defense being as horrendous as they are, like somehow finding more than 2 touchdowns against them unless some interception returns or special teams touchdowns are involved. So, I mean, I like Illinois this game, but not to beat the Indiana by 14 points in the spread.
Yeah, I think I'd take the points in this game too. I guess the way that I could see this, I could see Indiana, because it seems like the strength of Illinois' defense is their run stop, and that's really not what Indiana is all about. I could see them breaking some big plays, and then Illinois, Shielhaas making some freshman mistakes, but Illinois is a better team. I like Illinois to win, but I agree with you, Pete. I'd take the points.
Yeah, I can see Indiana being the first team ever not to have a rushing attempt in this game.
Absolutely.
All right, so the second game we'll take a look at is Penn State at Minnesota. Pete, do you have a spread for this game?
I do. Penn State's giving 9.5 points to Minnesota on this one.
At home. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I mean, Penn State's got a decent defense as long as they're not completely banged up, which unfortunately they are. And I mean, Minnesota doesn't really do anything well, but they did manage to keep it close against USC. I don't know what to think on that one. I think Penn State's going to win it because they're not completely awful. But as far as the spread, I don't know.
Penn State, they have to have, like, one dominant game this year, don't they? Like, they have to...
Games like this, I mean, in terms of a spread pick, I wouldn't touch this game with a 10-foot pole because... How can you possibly know how Minnesota is going to respond to having their coach fired in the middle of the week, you know? Like, I think that I like Penn State to win this game because I think they're the better team. I think Minnesota's awful, but, like, I have no idea how Minnesota is going to come out and play in this one. I guess, if anything, I'd take Penn State to cover, but I'm not confident in that at all.
Yeah, that sounds about right, but... I mean, Penn State really hasn't been dominant at all. I mean, even against Kent State, they only put up 24, and they let Temple hang around all day because they couldn't get in the end zone. It's hard to say, but I think if I had to pick, I would probably go with Penn State and give the points.
Okay.
I mean, I take Penn State in the spread because they may win by 10, but that's what I'm feeling right now.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to a more interesting game, I guess. Purdue at Ohio State. Pete, what's the spread in this game?
Ohio State is giving 24 points to Purdue. Maybe the gamblers in Vegas think that Ohio State's going to come out pissed.
Yeah, you know, honestly, I like Ohio State to cover that spread. I mean, not only do you have Ohio State coming out pissed after a really terrible performance last week, but you also have the revenge factor for Dame and West Lafayette last year. The worst I think I've seen the Ohio State team play under Tressel. I think Ohio State is going to come out in this game really pissed off and trying to kind of reestablish themselves as a team to be feared in the conference.
Yeah, they might throw the ball more than 15 times in this game. Yeah, I got to agree with you on this one. I think they have to do something here. At home, I mean, if this is a close game, I just don't see how this bodes well for Ohio State at all. I think 28 points, 4 touchdowns is what I'm seeing.
Yeah. Dan?
I think Ohio State's going to win this one going away. I think they'll cover it. I mean, Tressel probably calls off the dogs at some point, but then it'll be 31 or 34. And Purdue, I mean, they started the season 2-0 in the Big Ten, but that's against Northwestern and Minnesota, not exactly the powerhouses of the league. And they had a really rough non-conference schedule. I just don't see Purdue hanging with them.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to say, I think that this is a game where Tressel probably doesn't call off the dots because he's trying to put up an impressive scoreline for national voters and things like that, and also probably kind of residual bitterness about the way the game went down against Purdue last year. I think Ohio State walks away with this one. The last non-Michigan State game of the week is a delicious matchup in Iowa City. Wisconsin, fresh off a huge home victory, goes in to take on Iowa. And quite frankly, Michigan State fans should be rooting for Wisconsin in this game. Pete, what's the spread here?
I've got it, and it's Iowa is giving Wisconsin 5.5 points.
Kind of a big spread for this game, don't you think?
I mean, somewhat, but I mean, I'm just having flashbacks to the Wisconsin-Michigan State team and how Michigan State, like, aside from a few James White runs, was able to just pretty much, I mean, maybe not suffocate, but contain the Wisconsin running game. Hey, look at Iowa, who has a better defensive line. Maybe a step below the linebacker department, but still very good. And I can see why the spread is 5.5. Like, I would actually take Iowa and the spread in this game.
Okay, Dan, what do you think?
It's going to be one heck of a game. It's going to be a real physical battle. I think it's actually going to look a lot like our game against Simville next week. But, I think Wisconsin, they probably won't have much of a letdown because Iowa is one of their main rivals. But I think they're going to be in a little bit rougher shape just from having played Ohio State, and they'll be a little bit beat up. And I think Iowa takes it by a touchdown.
Yeah, I guess my comment about the spread being bid is just because when you see, what's to be a relatively evenly matched game, I mean, that's home advantage plus an additional 2.5 points. So that's a little bit bigger than I expected. But I like Iowa to win this game. I certainly hope that they don't. But I think that Iowa is, first of all, I think they're a better team than Wisconsin is, and they've got the game at home. And additionally, I think that Iowa is going to be out to prove something after Michigan kind of lit them up in the second half, in the fourth quarter, really, in Ann Arbor last week. Wisconsin's secondary is still kind of dicey, and I could see Darrell Johnson-Culianos having another big day. He was obviously fantastic this past week. And just in terms of the head-to-head matchup, I mean, Iowa just dominated Wisconsin in the second half of this game up in Madison last year. Just in terms of the intangibles, I don't trust Brett Bielema to keep these guys focused coming off of a big win. It's a big win for Bielema, but I still don't rate him very highly as a coach. And I like Iowa to take this one. I'll take Iowa to cover, I guess. The last game of the week is obviously Michigan State. Traveling outside of the state of Michigan for the first time this year, it's going to be crazy once they're outside the state lines. Going to Evanston to take on Northwestern. Pete, what's the spread in this game?
It's weird because Michigan State was favored by 8 points, and this dropped all the way to Michigan State only being favored by 5 now.
That seems awfully juicy. I think Pete and I are going to reserve our predictions for later this week. But Dan, what do you think about this game?
That spread game is very, very low to me. Actually, looking at my rankings that do take margin of victory into account, I mean, they don't consider home field at all, but that has us as a 25-point favorite. Now, I think that's overstating it by quite a bit. And strange things happen when we play Northwestern. We had the 05 game, which I'd rather not talk about. The 06 game where we were down 38-3 and came back to win. And 08, we had all sorts of crazy special teams plays and turnovers early on that got us out to a pretty big lead without really doing much on offense.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to say. And also, I think this is a bit of a trap game with Iowa coming up next week, and that's going to be a huge game. And I'm a little worried that he's going to be looking past this one a little bit. But I think our coaching staff is too good to let them lose focus completely, and I think we'll see something kind of similar to what happened with the Illinois game. We come out a little bit flat-looking and probably trailing a little bit at halftime, and then we come out in the second half, turn it on, and I think we end up winning by 2 scores.
All right. So, and with that, we just want to thank Spartan Dan for coming on and talking to us about the Bradley Terry rankings, which, again, are available at dbaker.50webs.com, also available on the link on the left side of The Only Colors. Dan, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks a lot, Dan.
This has been episode 2 of The Only Podcast. We'd like to thank our guests, Roger Sherman from Sippin' on Purple, and Spartan Dan. Thanks for listening, and until next time, go State, beat Northwestern.